Welcome to the deep dive. You know, modern applications, whether they're these tiny little microservices or huge sprawling IoT networks, they all seem to face this one constant headache. It's how do all these different parts actually talk to each other reliably? Especially when, say, one part gets totally swamped with traffic, or maybe it just goes offline for a bit, because if that connection breaks, well, your whole system can just grind to a halt. So today, we're doing a deep dive into a technology built specifically to solve that exact problem, RabbitMQ. People sometimes call it one broker to queue them all.
Yeah, our mission today is really to unpack this seemingly complex bit of infrastructure, the messaging and streaming broker. We want to demystify it completely so that you, the curious learner, can get a real handle on what it actually does, how it works under the hood, and maybe more importantly, why pretty much every big tech company is using it, even if you're totally new to this stuff, starting from scratch. But before we jump right in, we really want to thank the supporter of the show, SafeServer.
SafeServer manages the hosting for complex software, just like RabbitMQ, and they're great at supporting your digital transformation journey. You can check out more about what they offer at www.safeserver.de.
Yeah, and that mission is spot on because RabbitMQ, despite the maybe slightly technical name, is actually a pretty elegant concept when you break it down. Essentially, think of it as a really powerful, enterprise-ready, open-source intermediary, like the ultimate communication hub. It sits right in the middle between different software applications, and its whole job is making sure their conversations are, well, efficient, definitely reliable, and pretty versatile too. It's just a perfect fit for anything involving distributed systems. So that could be complex microservices or maybe applications handling streams of real-time data or even managing these massive fleets of IoT devices. And critically, it's open source. It's licensed under the Mozilla Public License 2.0, which is great for adoption.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. If it's a broker, like you said, that sounds like it's doing more than just passing notes, right? What's the actual heavy lifting involved in brokering a message?
Right. The heavy lifting is all about reliability and decoupling. So you have one application, a publisher sending a message, and another application, a consumer, that needs to receive it. The broker, RabbitMQ, sits right there in the middle managing the queue, like a post office sorting mail. Its main job, really, is guaranteeing that message is safe and sound and will eventually get delivered, even if that consumer application is down for maintenance, or maybe it's just totally overwhelmed by a sudden traffic spike, or maybe it just hasn't gotten around to checking its mailbox yet.
Okay, that makes sense. What I find fascinating looking at the source material is the flexibility it offers. It seems like RabbitMQ doesn't lock you into just one way of doing things. How does it manage to talk to everything from like a huge enterprise server down to some tiny sensor on a drone?
That is definitely one of its core strengths. It's fundamentally a multi-protocol broker, which basically means it speaks lots of different standardized languages. And that's what lets you connect almost any service written in pretty much any programming language you can think of without getting stuck with one vendor. No lock-in.
Gotcha.
For someone just starting out, you probably don't need to memorize all the version numbers, but knowing the main protocols helps. You've got AMQP, that's the Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. Think of that as the kind of heavyweight enterprise backbone.
Yeah.
It's excellent for really complex, reliable messaging, especially when you need transactions. Then there's MQTT. Now, MQTT is super lightweight. It was specifically designed for devices that are, let's say, constrained. Tiny sensors, maybe smart home gadgets, where bandwidth and battery power are really limited.
Ah, okay. So that's the difference between like a massive bank server talking to another bank server versus, I don't know, 1,000 smart thermostats trying to update their temperature every minute.
Exactly that kind of difference, yeah. And then finally, it also supports STOMP. STOMP is often used for, let's say, simpler messaging tasks. It integrates really easily into web browsers, for instance. And yeah, RabbitMQ is clever enough to even let you communicate using these protocols like MQTT and STOMP directly over WebSockets. So your web app running right in the browser can talk natively to the messaging system, which is pretty neat.
Okay, this is where it starts getting really interesting for me. We know it can talk to almost anything now, but how does it handle the sheer complexity? You know, different messages, different needs. How does it decide if a message should go to just one place or maybe 10 different places? Or, I don't know, maybe hold on to it until next Tuesday?
Right, that decision-making comes down to its flexibility in defining the message route. You get really granular control over how messages flow through the system. This includes things like setting up complex routing and filtering rules. So you can publish just one single event, but only specific consumers that match certain criteria will actually receive it. It also has features like federation. Now, federation is basically connecting multiple RabbitMQ brokers together, maybe across different data centers or even different continents.
Okay.
And of course, it supports streaming capabilities too, which address a slightly different need than traditional queues, more about that persistent flow of events.
But all that flexibility doesn't mean much if it's not safe, right? Like if a service is handling something critical, say processing that concert ticket purchase you mentioned, losing that message would be, well, catastrophic. How does RabbitMQ go beyond just best effort delivery and actually guarantee reliability?
Good question. Reliability really stands on two main pillars. The first one is acknowledgement. So the broker holds on to that message securely until the receiving consumer explicitly sends back a confirmation, basically saying, yep, got it, processed it successfully. Okay. If that consumer crashes or fails before it sends that acknowledgement, the message just stays safe and sound back in the queue, ready to be delivered again, maybe to another instance of that consumer.
Okay, that's one pillar. What's the second?
The second pillar is replication, especially when you're running RabbitMQ as a cluster of multiple servers, which is common for high availability. RabbitMQ makes sure messages aren't just sitting on one single machine. It offers specific queue types designed for high safety, like quorum queues. Think of quorum queues like a kind of digital safety deposit box. It requires a majority of quorum of the nodes in the cluster to agree and confirm, yes, we have safely stored this message before it's considered truly durable. This gives you really strong guarantees about data consistency and safety, even if one of your servers suddenly fails.
And you mentioned streams earlier. Is that just a fancy name for a queue that runs really fast, or is it something different?
It's fundamentally different, actually. Streams are designed for persistence and keeping history. A standard queue is usually destructive. Once a consumer successfully processes a message, it's gone from the queue. A stream, on the other hand, works like a persistent, append-only log. Imagine a news ticker that just keeps running and never forgets what it showed.
Oh.
Consumers read events from the stream without deleting them. And importantly, they can even rewind and reread older events whenever they need to. This is super powerful for modern event-driven architectures where different systems might need to process the same event history at different times or speeds.
That distinction makes a lot more sense now. Okay, let's try and ground this in the real world. For someone listening, maybe building an application right now, can we look at those four specific examples from the source material where RabbitMQ really shines?
Absolutely. Let's start with maybe the most common use case, decoupling services. We can call this the load absorber pattern.
Right. Okay. So say my main backend service generates some kind of notification event. Maybe it needs to trigger both an email and a push notification. How does RabbitMQ act as that load absorber here?
Well, instead of your main service having to directly call the email system,
yeah,
wait for it, then call the push notification system, wait for that, which can be slow and brittle.
Yeah.
It just publishes one simple message to RabbitMQ, something like notification needed for user X. And that's it. Its job is done instantly.
Okay.
RabbitMQ then takes over. You'd have two completely separate independent microservices, maybe an email manager and a push manager, each subscribed to receive those notification messages from the queue. So the main service avoids the load. It finishes its task super quickly. And the best part, you can take the entire email manager offline for maintenance, and the push notifications would still go out without interruption. The core application isn't blocked.
That's powerful decoupling. Okay, next up, remote procedure call. RPC. You called this the organized waiter. How does this simplify something complex, like that example of selling concert tickets across lots of different websites or kiosks where you need really careful validation?
Right. RPC using a message queue is about getting a synchronized response back, but doing it with the safety and orderliness of the queue. So the kiosk wanting to sell a ticket publishes an order message. But critically, it includes a unique tag, like a tracking number. This is called a correlation ID. It's like the waiter writing down your specific table number on the order slip.
Got it.
The backend service that validates ticket availability processes these orders sequentially from the queue first come, first served. This avoids complex database locking or race conditions. Now, crucially, the kiosk doesn't just sit there hammering the server asking, is it done yet? Instead, it subscribes to a specific reply queue, listening only for a response message that contains its original correlation ID.
Ah, so it waits patiently for its specific order.
Exactly. It's an organized wait. This lets the system safely handle potentially heavy, complex requests, ensuring that even if there's a sudden slew of ticket orders, they're processed reliably in order, and each response gets back to the right requester. Using acknowledgments and maybe those quorum queues we mentioned adds even more safety here.
Makes sense. Okay, third use case, streaming, the multitasker. The example was a video platform where uploading one video triggers maybe half a dozen different background tasks, transcoding, analysis, notifying followers. How does a RabbitMQ stream handle that efficiently?
This is where streams really shine. The initial upload service simply appends a single event, like new video uploaded, ID 123, to a dedicated RabbitMQ stream. Because the stream is non-destructive, like we discussed, multiple different backend applications can all subscribe to the same stream and read that same new video event.
Simultaneously.
Simultaneously, yes, but independently. So the Notify Followers service might read the event and act on it immediately. But maybe the really heavy video analysis service reads the event, notes its position in the stream, but decides to only actually process it later, perhaps during off-peak hours to save resources. It doesn't block anyone else, and it doesn't require the message to be published multiple times.
Yeah.
Everyone reads the same event log at their own pace.
That allows for huge scale and really varied workflows without duplicating messages. Okay, finally, that really cool, slightly sci-fi example. IoT and the patient buffering system, referencing those package delivery space drones orbiting Kepler 438b dealing with terrible network connections.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a great illustration of chaining RabbitMQ deployments. The idea is that each drone runs its own local, miniature, standalone RabbitMQ node. While it's out there, potentially disconnected for long periods, it collects all its status reports, position, battery, package status, and buffers them securely in its local RabbitMQ.
So it holds on to them.
It holds onto them safely. Then, when the planets align, metaphorically speaking, and a network connection back to the main server becomes available, the drone's local RabbitMQ uses a built-in feature, often called shovels or similar Federation plugins, to automatically and reliably transfer all those cached reports upstream to the central RabbitMQ server on the home planet, or, you know, the main data center.
Wow.
This ability to chain brokers lets you build incredibly resilient systems that can handle being offline. And because you'd likely use MQTT for the drone-to-broker communication due to its lightweight nature, RabbitMQ is also exceptionally good at handling potentially millions of concurrent connections from huge swarms of these devices.
It's clearly incredibly robust technology, but who's actually building and maintaining this? Is it purely a community effort, or is there a big company behind the scenes?
It's actually a really successful mix of both, which is often a good sign. RabbitMQ itself is free and fully open source. It has a massive, really active global community. You can see that on GitHub, last I checked, something like 13,200 stars and 4,000 forks, which is significant engagement.
Yeah.
The core server development, though, is primarily done by engineers at VMware Tanzu. And VMware Tanzu is now owned by Broadcom, who holds the copyright, dating way back to its origins around 2007.
And the feedback from people actually using it seems overwhelmingly positive. We saw that quote from one user who basically said, "RabbitMQ is the one message broker that hasn't given me grief in my career." That's quite an endorsement.
It really is. That kind of real-world, battle-tested feedback speaks volumes, doesn't it? There was another great one. Someone mentioned running RabbitMQ for over 8 years in some really demanding distributed setups, including, get this, a fleet of 180 buses where every single bus ran its own local RabbitMQ instance. And they said they never had a single issue in all those years. That level of reliability in such a challenging environment is precisely why so many companies trust it.
Absolutely. So if an organization decides, okay, this is critical for us, we need this kind of reliability, but maybe they need more formal support than community forums can offer, what are their options? They have a pretty clear choice, really. The community support is excellent. You've got GitHub discussions, a very active community Discord server, even IRC channels like #RabbitMQ on LibraChat for real-time help from other users and sometimes developers.
Okay.
But for businesses running truly mission-critical applications, where you need things like guaranteed response times, help with disaster recovery planning, compliance requirements, and maybe 24/7 availability.
Mm.
Well, that's where the commercial offering comes in. Broadcom, through Tanzu, offers an enterprise-grade version of RabbitMQ. And the key benefit there is you get 24/7 expert support, often directly from the core engineers who actually build and maintain the product. So you have immediate access to deep, specialized knowledge when you're dealing with high-stakes production issues.
Right, that makes sense. So to kind of wrap this up for you, the learner listening in, Think of RabbitMQ as this indispensable, highly flexible, and really incredibly reliable air traffic controller for all the messages flying around inside your software systems. It's the thing that makes sure every message, whether it's just a simple little notification or a super critical financial transaction, gets exactly where it needs to go safely and efficiently. And it does this regardless of crazy network conditions or sudden server overloads.
Absolutely. And maybe here's a final thought to leave you with, something to mull over based on what we've discussed. Given RabbitMQ's incredible interoperability, how it supports everything from heavyweight enterprise protocols like AMQP to lightweight IoT ones like MQTT, and even browser-friendly stuff like Stomp, and the fact that you can find client libraries to talk to it in virtually any programming language out there, how might that sheer flexibility, that ability to mix and match languages and protocols so easily, fundamentally change how modern development teams think about technology choices? Could it essentially eliminate the fear of vendor lock-in when they need to pivot or adopt new tools?
That really drives home the power of having that open source multi-protocol foundation, doesn't it? Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the world of RabbitMQ. And we want to give one more shout out to our sponsor, SafeServer. Remember, they handle hosting for complex software like RabbitMQ and can really support your digital transformation efforts. Find out more at www.safeserver.de. Until next time, keep exploring.